Well, thank you guys for joining us today on Galesburg in Focus.
Happy to be here.
So, Lance, let's just jump right into it. When farmers look back at 2025, what kind of harvest are they going to remember?
They're going to remember wind events and down corn. They're going to remember amazingly dry harvest conditions.
Yeah.
Just never rain during harvest, and soybeans down, I don't know what the driest ones you heard of, Jim, but probably low 8% beans, corn. I heard some 10, 11% corn. People didn't realize grain would get that dry in the field in some cases.
And, yeah.
You know, a lot of yield variability, disease issues, down corn from wind. And, you know, I think those are the things that are going to stick in their mind. Some are kind of the more negatives rather than the positives.
Yeah. Jim, how about you?
Yeah. You know, by the time fall was over, you know, I turned in a lot more claims than I thought I would when harvest began.
Yeah.
And the wind. And then as it got really dry, yeah, you just started to see yield slip off in those later ones. And, you know, it's crazy. Northwest Knox County was a tough area. Southeast Knox County grew some record crop, so it's almost scary to be on the fence line. Best crops ever to processing multi-peril claims.
What's amazing that things can change so much just for a few miles from one end of the county to the other. Mitch, do you see that? And have you seen that in your career so far?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had the good opportunity to live in Missouri. I mean, I've lived in Indiana, Minnesota for a short period of time.
Yeah.
You know, your topography changes, and that's one thing about the state of Illinois is the topography changes that we get from Champaign to, you know, where I grew up in Sterling is absolutely, it's insane, really.
Yeah.
You go from sand to the deepest black dirt you can think of, back to sand, you know. Some guys have never heard of irrigating corn. Some guys don't know how to grow corn without it. So, and so those location variability is just part of what we deal with here in the Prairie State.
Yeah, absolutely. What surprised you most in the field this year, Lance?
I honestly think I was pleasantly surprised. I had been a kind of a pessimist through the growing season. I had been on record early saying this crop wasn't going to be as good as last year's.
Right.
And there was a lot of talk of, you know, record crop. Nationally, that's true. Locally, it's not, you know, and Jim called out correctly. I mean, there were parts of Mercer County, Northern Warren, Northwestern Knox, you know, yields were well off of what they were last year. And then other places, you know, I'm more Southern Knox County, Southern Warren County, you know, my crop was quite a bit better than my crop was the year before, but I didn't have a record crop the year before either. So,
yeah.
I mean, yields just bounce around all over the place. So, you know, there was some really good yields out there. Soybeans were impressively good considering it didn't rain for the last 45 or 60 days of the growing season. Mm-hmm. And that's when soybeans are determining their yield potential. And I think that's a point that I've been making with growers that, you know, we had a lot of things that went wrong this year. And we raised a really good crop, and we started out with, you know, record potential. And, you know, it's a little scary to think about how good it would have been had several things not gone wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just goes to show you what the potential truly is. And it's just a lot easier to raise 250 or 260 or 270 bushel corn and 70 or 80 bushel beans than it used to be.
Yeah. Jim, did early decisions pay off this year for
They
producers?
Did. You know, in the markets, planning ahead was a bonus. You know, it's one of those years, you go back and retrace it, but, you know, the life of contract highs of both December corn and November beans came 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because we came off the bull market, and so the guys who are forward thinkers, yes, it paid huge dividends to be doing mathematical marketing based on long-term moving averages. You know, I'll never stop telling people the 10-year average price of corn on the board is 450. When it's close to five or higher, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Beans, 1120, well, you had to sell Christmas of 2023 to sell the 25 bean crop for over $12.
Gee whiz.
We have guys that did.
Okay.
Now, we'll all say, boy, I wish I'd have sold three, four times as much. But we were looking at revenue per acre, and there's times where you just got to say, I know the front market's way up, but I can't let these above average markets get away from me.
So let's talk about, we're talking about lessons that farmers are already talking about for this coming season. What are some of those lessons that you think farmers are bringing into 2026?
Well, most everyone, since this is 3 days after the crop report, is taking an attitude that isn't correct into the crop report.
Oh.
I mean, it's pretty humbling. If you were waiting for bullish news, it didn't come, and here we sit. I hope everyone in my office that bought calls ahead of the report did the hedge thing and sold the grain.
Okay.
I hope that's where they're at when it's all said and done.
Are you seeing that? What are you recommending to your customers here, Mitch?
It's one of those deals where you hope that when you are looking out at what the price is in, say, 6-7 months, a carry is not a carry until you sell it. And that's just the fact of the matter. So, those bins are going to pay for themselves. That's why we put them up. That's why the government subsidized putting them up way back when, before I was born, certainly. So, but looking at that and then just kind of thinking like, your local grain merchandiser a little bit. So looking at those carries, looking at what the elevator is going to pay to deliver that when they need it, and then seeing if that's optionality for you. And if it's not, it's not, and that's something that we can certainly help with if it's not. You look at what calls we're trading at there in the early fall for what you could buy and at the money May call for. I mean, you could buy those cheaper than you could storm to get to May. Captain Hindsight's definitely not helpful in that, but if we're talking about lessons that you hope people that are being aware of, it's things like that and just being proactive when they need to be.
Yeah. Lance, on the grain side, what are some lessons that you're hoping the farmers are going to bring into 2026?
I think just recognizing, when we get a crop that is ahead of normal in development and you get a warm, dry fall, how quickly it's going to dry in the field, and it's going to dry in the field faster than you can harvest it. So being ready to start early, being willing to start early, being willing to pick some corn that's wetter than you would ideally like, because you got two options. You either pick some stuff that's wetter than you want, or you're going to end up picking a whole bunch that's drier than you want. Mm-hmm. And you kind of pick your poison there. And not everybody can handle high moisture corn, and what's high moisture for one guy is different than what another guy considers high moisture. But it, generally, we would have all been better off if we'd all started a week or 10 days earlier than we did.
Gotcha. Well, you said there was a target moisture percentage that people were waiting for, and it took a while to get there, right?
Well, it takes a while to get there, but then this year it didn't stay there very long.
It
dropped really fast. Some guys are willing to start at 28, some are willing to start at 23, some don't like to start till it's 17 or 18. And if you started when it was under 20, very quickly it was drier than you wanted it to be. And normally the seed industry talks about, hybrids that dry down fast as though that's a benefit. This year it was almost a detriment. Were actually better off to have stuff that was drying slowly in the field because you just couldn't get it done fast enough. And that was because of when that crop matures as early as this crop did, and you've got corn that's done growing and all it has to do is dry and it starts that process the middle of August, and you've got 60 days of summer type weather and very low humidity. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like being in a dryer just standing in the field.
Yeah. Lance Tarchione is a technical agronomist with DeKalb and AskGrow. He's also the host of Ag Talk Saturday mornings here on WGIL. Jim Anderson from North & Company is here. You hear him Wednesday mornings on WGIL. And Mitch Klodfelter is one of the new team members at North & Company. Again, great to have you guys here. We've been talking about this for a little while to get Jim and Lance and now Mitch in here to talk. They've got a history together. I thought I'd take a step back and just kind of talk about you folks here a little bit. Jim, you grew up in the Oneida area, Altona, that area?
I'm living basically on the family farm. My great uncle raised his family on, and I grew up around the corner. So, yeah,
yeah.
I was on the line. I was one house away from being a Rova guy.
Okay.
So I'm a Galva guy by about a quarter of a mile.
Yeah. And you farmed all your life?
My dad, we raised livestock, hogs in the field.
Yeah.
Few cows, you know, back in those days you could raise a family on a couple hundred acres and some livestock. And
we
did it all out in the field back in the good old days prior to 1998.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
Kind of put an end to the out in the field hog lots.
Yeah. And you went to U of I.
Yep.
So in the ag program, right?
Yep. Yeah. I'm an ag econ major.
Okay. And so that was the goal, to be in markets the whole time? Well, you actually went in seed sales, didn't you? Fertilizer, sorry.
I would say when I first went to college, I probably had farm management in my head.
Okay.
And after taking my first farm management class with that professor, I thought, no, there's a better way to... I'm going to be better than that. I'm sorry.
Well, Lance is over here laughing. He probably knows. I think I know who he's talking about.
I moved more towards the agronomy and business side of it, and not the farm management side.
Yeah. So you're with crop production for a few years, and then went out on your own with Northern Company.
Yep.
How long has that been now?
This is year 23 for David and I, and this is year 3 with Porter Hay. And,
yes.
You know, God rest him. We're going to Mike Klukas's funeral tomorrow. He passed away here at 91 this past week.
Okay.
So basically, if you take 23 years off, he was about 68 when he finally decided to sell David the business, and then I got involved with him. So.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How time flies.
Great history there. And what do you still enjoy about the whole grain marketing, the marketing business here?
It's never the same.
No,
in 23 seasons, I've got the charts here, and it's always like right now, it's January, and I'll look at David, and it's like, well, I wonder what this year is going to be like, you know?
Yeah.
Because it won't be exactly like last year.
We're talking about Jim's partner, David North from North & Company, and you have a new team member. You're starting the year off. We're introducing a brand new team member here, Mitch Klodfelter. Welcome to WGIL here.
Thank you.
Thanks for
having me. I would be here.
Now, you were talking earlier, you're from around the Sterling area, but you've got, have you always been in agriculture or?
Yeah. So I grew up in Sterling. My mom and dad moved up there in 97, I believe.
Yeah.
My dad is actually from southeastern Illinois and still farms with my uncle down there. So was involved with livestock. My sister and I did the old stock show thing when we were growing up, and I continued that through college. And dad and I still raise a handful of registered Simmentals up there. But got into the grain farming as well. Always helped out with that in southeastern Illinois. Still try to when I can. In my professional career as well, I've been involved in agriculture the whole time. So ag degree from University of Illinois, major in ag biz, and then minor in animal science. So had a whole lot of fun down there.
Excellent. And you say you spent time in Mexico, Missouri. Is that...
Yeah, absolutely. When I graduated, I took a job in Mexico, Missouri with ADM, trading soybean meal over there. We were a relatively small crush plant. We like to call ourselves the home of the 750 bushel contract.
What's that mean? What does that mean?
That entails
chuckles here from the other two here.
That entails a lot of farm splits, a lot of. Let's call it interesting ways that you need to write those contracts for the farmers in the area. You know, one interesting story I can tell you is Missouri is a barter state, which means that we could take the money that we were going to pay somebody and pay it directly to, say, an equipment dealer.
Okay.
And so I got a call one time to send money to, you know, the Ford dealership down the road. And I had to ask my boss, like, can we do that? Is that something we're allowed to do? And he's like, yeah, he explained it to me and all that fun stuff. So I have some very fond memories from there, and then kicked over to Central Illinois again after about a year and a half in Missouri and trading unit trains for ADM. So I was fortunate to have that opportunity. It was a good time.
So you just started with North & Company, Porter Hay and North & Company. What are you going to be – what are you doing with – you're doing what Jim does then, right? Is that –
Yeah. I mean, that's the goal, is to learn from Dave and Jim. You know, the options, the futures, and the cash is something that I'm comfortable with. Something I've been doing ever since somebody was paying me to use my brain. to work with those guys is good, and how they use the crop insurance to work well with a good hedge line. So
yeah, excellent. Well, again, congratulations to you, Mitch Klotfelter, from North & Company. So, and this next person here is a recognizable voice on the radio too, is a host of our Ag Talk program on Saturday mornings, but local producer and technical agronomist with DeKalb and Asgrow, Lance Tarchione. Lance, welcome back into the studio here.
Yeah, always fun to be in the studio, and love doing stuff here on the radio.
Now, you grew up on a farm.
I did, near London Mills. It was a diversified
family grain farm.
Yep, there, diversified grain livestock farm, kind of similar to Jim's. There wasn't really enough there for me to come back home to the farm. That was not really an option, so I had to do something else, and under protest, I went to college at the University of Illinois, and that's actually the first place I met Jim. I don't think we really ever crossed paths in 4-H or anything when we were growing up, but we had our college job at the meat science lab was we were paired up there, and that's where I got to know Jim and a lot of local guys from this area worked there at the meat lab and had that experience. And that's a unique work environment. We had a pretty unique manager that worked there, and so we all got lots of good Chuck stories. And
probably
so it was
most that we can't tell here on the
it was one of those places that you didn't really like a lot of what you had to do, but you like the people you were doing it with.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And Jim was talking about how he still uses some of his meat cutting, experience.
That's
there.
That's right. Anybody in my neighborhood shoots a deer and doesn't want to pay processing, I'm available. I work cheap.
Yeah. So Lance, you came back to the area and you went to just
by luck, actually. I mean, I never really wanted to leave this area when I went to school in the first place. And I marvel at kids who, have the desire and the courage and the, whatever to, go to school halfway across the country. I started out as a forestry major, actually, before I switched over to agronomy. And the extent of my school selection process was I was going to go to school in Illinois. There's 2 4-year forestry schools in the state, one at Southern and one at Illinois.
Yeah.
Illinois was 2.5 hours from home, and Southern was 5 hours from home. So I went to U of I, and that was the extent of my decision process.
Yeah.
And realized after I'd been in forestry for a couple years that not a lot of forestry jobs in Illinois, and you were probably going to end up somewhere else. And
like Yellowstone,
if you wanted to work, if you wanted to work close to home, maybe working with crops would be a better idea than working in the forestry industry. So I switched over to agronomy and ended up staying there for my master's, which also was not my plan. Job market in ag was pretty weak.
A lot of this was your dad. He being a farmer all his life.
Yeah.
He was trying to guide you and to say, don't want to do this.
Guide's not a strong enough word. Force push. Yeah. He was determined that I was going to do something other than farm.
Yeah. Because he knew that at the time.
It'd been tough for him. He was working two jobs off farm to hang on to the farm, and had, he made it through that.
Yeah.
But it was tough, and, he thought I could do better. His idea how I was going to do better was go to school and get a real job and not follow his footsteps to be a farmer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I give that decision all the credit for the fact that I'm a farmer today.
Yeah.
Because if I hadn't had that job to lean on and make some money that I could save and put away and get my start, because he wasn't financially able to give me my start. So I had to kind of make it on my own, and I would have never done that without my career.
Yeah.
So, if I'd have done what I wanted to do and stayed home and been his, underpaid hired man, I probably wouldn't be farming today, honestly.
Right. Lance Tarchione, a technical agronomist with DeKalb & Asgrow, host of Ag Talk here Saturday mornings on WGIL. You are with Bear, DeKalb and Asco. Right. You've been through all the mergers and,
sure,
and all
yeah.
that. With
yeah,
the,
you
the
can't
big...
be in the business without going through some mergers and such. So, yeah, we're Bear now. It was Monsanto before that. You know, DeKalb and Asco used to be companies. They're now just brands owned by Monsanto and now Bear. So, so yeah, I've been, let's see, March will be my 33rd year in this business. Spent a few years away from Monsanto and Bayer there in the middle. Worked in ag retail like Jim did.
Yeah,
and got some experience there. Had an opportunity to come back to Monsanto, and that's you know what I love doing.
How big is your area for the DeKalb and Asco?
Yeah, so I cover 9 counties.
Okay,
go from the Mississippi River to kind of Lincoln, Mount Pulaski area in the central part of the state. That's 4 sales territories, and in my line of work, that's a pretty small territory. If you work for a smaller company that doesn't have as many acres of their product out there, you know, there's people that do what I do that cover the whole state of Illinois for different brands. But it's nice to be, you know, I live in my territory, and I travel a lot, but I don't ever get more than about 2 hours from home. So.
Gotcha. Lance Sarchione, again, technical agronomist with DeKalb and Asco, host of Ag Talk. Jim Anderson and Mitch Claude Felter are here from North & Company, Risk Management there in Galva. And we're kind of doing a recap of 2025, looking ahead at 2026 and trying to get a handle on what producers are going to be experiencing this year. So, Jim, I'll direct this to you. When the bins are full, how are farmers actually feeling financially?
Well, it just depends. Are the bins full of pre-priced corn and beans or spot-priced corn and beans? That makes a huge difference.
Okay.
You know, Mitch made the comment, you know, there's a lot of ways to manage a market with a bin, and there was great opportunities this year to capture carry. But yet you had to have your shoelaces on and the plan in place a year ago, January, February, because just as bearish as this crop report was last year, was pretty darn friendly and sent us on a quick ride to the highs.
We never
got beyond that February high. Well, do you have the orders in and the plan in place when the next rally comes?
Yeah.
That's my biggest thing is being prepared all the time to know what you need to do to capture gross revenue and be profitable. Mm-hmm. Picking a top's tough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So thinking of 2025, did strong yields automatically mean strong profits? I'll direct this over to Mitch here.
I mean, this may be a better question for these two guys.
Okay, yeah.
They've been living it definitely longer than I have. But short story, no. But I'll kick that back over to these guys.
Well, it's a challenge because your farm is extremely important to your profitability.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with the price of grain or the production nationally or globally, which is what's going to drive the market.
Okay.
So you can have a bumper crop and get a good price or a bad price based on the bigger picture of things, or you can have a horrible crop and get a really good price if everybody's got a horrible crop, which kind of offsets the poor yield, or you can get a terrible price if you're the poor, you know, individual that was in the small area that had the bad crop. And that's where what Jim does comes into play to kind of hedge your bets on, you know, which way that's going to go.
Well, it's kind of where agronomy meets risk management. Is that kind of what we're...
I think when, you know, from an agronomy perspective, it's a little bit easier than the marketing side of things because a farmer knows if he's sitting on a 275 bushel corn crop, he's done well.
Okay.
But when he makes a commitment to sell that crop for $4.50 a bushel, he has no idea whether he did well or not.
Yeah.
You know, because if it goes to $6, he's going to feel like an idiot. Even if the decision he made at the time to sell it for $4.50 was sound decision.
Solid, yeah.
Right. You know, and so you know, I think from a yield standpoint, I think guys are they're pretty confident in what they can produce. They know no matter where they're at in yield, whether it's 180 or 280, they know whether that's good or bad.
Yeah.
And it's harder to tell, you know, when I've sold corn for $5 before, I thought, man, that's really good. And then when it was six, I thought, well, I guess that wasn't so good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so it's all dependent on what happens to the market. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you feel like a genius for what you did, and sometimes you feel like a zero.
Well, Lance Tarchione, techno-agronomist with DeKalb and Asgrow, host of Ag Talk on Saturday mornings here on WGIL. We've got our friends from North & Company, Mitch Klotfelter, a new team member at North & Company, Jim Anderson. You hear him Wednesday mornings at about 8:50 here talking with Tyler and Jay about farm markets. Jim, I'm going to bring up this thing, hope, fear, and greed.
That's right.
Kind of goes along with what Lance is talking about. That plays a lot into farmers' decisions, right? And unfortunately, they put too much emotion into it, right?
Right. It is. I mean, when the market's going up, greed says, why would it go down?
Oh, yeah.
When it starts to break, we hope it comes back. Unfortunately, when it breaks below your cost of production, you sell in fear because now the banker's breathing down your neck. And it is hard. I mean, I've been through three big bull markets in 22 years.
Oh.
Only one was a demand-based market. That was the beginning of the ethanol boom in 07, 08.
Okay.
Most bull markets are on short crops, and they come out of nowhere. You know, nobody, you know, saw 2012 coming in May. We were making lows in May, and then we rocket shipped, you know, quickly. I was kind of talking to him about right now, South America looks really good. Well, 10 years ago, no one wants to talk about it, but we had a 388 and an 885 insurance price. Okay. And there was no sign of a good, all of a sudden, Argentina floods, beans rocket to $12, corn follows, but as fast as it went up, it's right back. And by the end of the summer, you wonder what happened.
My gosh.
If you weren't mentally looking at past years and preparing for volatility, we talk about my rodeo ride commercial.
We were talking about that off the mic. It really is. You're up and down, up and down. How do you have the stomach? How do you take the emotion out of this? How do you possibly do that?
Spreadsheets.
Mathematics.
Math and formulas.
And Lyle P. Fettig statistics. Mm-hmm. I work off average prices over time. I try not to get caught up in the short run. Because it'll get you in trouble.
It takes real discipline, Mitch, is what we're right. I mean, you got to be pretty disciplined in this.
You do. And I think, too, it plays into what is the market telling you to do today? We have some fantastic optionality on what we're able to do after you make a decision. But I think, you know, working with your agronomists, working with your marketers, and even working with the elevators. I mean, ask what the market is telling you to do today.
Yeah.
Once you make that decision, recalibrate, reevaluate, and figure out where your next target's going to be or what else plays into your spreadsheets and your formulas. They're going to allow you to be successful.
Yeah. How do you, Lance, take the emotion out of those decisions? How do you not react so quickly?
One thing that influences my marketing a lot is because I am coming from the agronomy side, I am probably overly confident in our ability to raise a crop.
Oh.
So I am extremely bearish as a farmer, and most of the marketing people I've ever worked with have said you're one of the most bearish farmers they've ever met.
Yeah.
Because I always think that the crop's going to come through and it's going to be as good or better than predicted. And so I'm always selling ahead, and I'm always, you know, when I mess up my marketing, it's because I sold too much too soon and then prices rallied. You know, I always think the first sale I make is my best sale, and then it's downhill from there. It's supposed to be the opposite of that. Your first sale is supposed to be your worst sale, and then it gets better.
Really?
But you
hope.
It's just your my philosophy is 180 degrees backwards from a lot of farmers. And I don't have a lot of bins, so I like to have my whole crop sold before I go to the field in the fall.
Look at that. I got a thumbs up from Jim Anderson over here.
And that there are years, and this is one of them, where that looks really good. You know, there was a couple back there that it looked pretty awful. I was delivering some You know, and I'm not a big options guy. There was times when I should have bought some. I'd have needed calls, right, for that. Yeah. Yep. So when I sold my 450 corn in that fall, it was worth $7.
Oh,
that's painful.
Yeah. Ooh.
I made the mistake. Jim will laugh at me. I made the mistake of doing the math on how much more money I would have made.
Oh, you can't.
I got that price versus the one I got, that's depressing. You don't want to do that.
And I know, talking with Jim over these years, you don't want to do that. That's where the discipline comes in. You got to plan, the plan, right?
Yep. And it's your business. And as long as the ink's black, don't ever regret black ink. Red ink is where you regret.
What's the saying? You can't go broke making money.
That's right.
Lance Targhiele.
I'm going to give Lance a hard time. I'm going to teach Lance here, if he's willing to give me an hour of his time, about trigger prices and there's a time to buy calls.
When
the market offers it to you, when you're in a deep hole in May, June, and it hasn't got to summer yet, those aggressive forward sales need to be covered.
That's because it
can happen.
That's what I need, because by the time I think of it, everybody in the world has thought of it, and it costs too much to do it. You need to be doing it when nobody else is thinking about it.
That's right. Lance Targhiele, techno-agronomist with DeKalvin Asgrow, host of our Saturday program, Ag Talk, here at Jim Anderson and Mitch Klotfelter from North & Company Risk Management from Galva. Jim is on Wednesday mornings on WGIL Morning News, about 8:50, talking about markets. Let's get into input costs and all that. Jim, how important was insurance and planning in 2025?
Well, it was important, because depending on what happened to you, was your peril a wind event?
Oh.
Or was it an actual combination of market loss and yield event?
Yeah.
Maybe all three. You know, balancing those tools, because every year there's the what's going to happen next year may not be the same as last year. And we processed a lot of wind claims late that last, week of October.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my buddy I deer hunt with, I called him about deer hunting, and I go, how's it going? He goes, I'm fighting this down corn. I said, well, you better turn a claim in, because it ain't over yet. You got till November.
Yeah.
And luckily I did call him, or he might have harvested everything and never let me know.
Yeah,
so, that's always you can't predict the peril. So balancing your insurance budget, it's kind of like balancing your seed. You don't plant all of one hybrid. Well, we've got a lot of tools.
Yeah.
Balance your tools so that extreme risk is covered, but then you can insure yourself into poverty. If you want to insure yourself to never lose, you won't gain much. So the farmer in me,
insure yourself into poverty.
Well, I have a limit. I mean, there's a lot of products, and if you want to spend $100 an acre on insurance, I can set you right up.
Yeah, right.
But what do you need, and what risk are you willing to take that makes sense? And it's not easy. You got to sit and do a little number crunching and look at your yield variability and some of the past markets and balance, because we've forgotten about 2012, and that's what scares me
this
winter. Everyone's going to load up on those county products because they're probably going to pay.
Huh.
And if you're sacrificing the multi-peril for that, and we have a 2012, hang on to your hat.
Well, we're talking ag this morning with our friends from North & Company. Lance Targhiele from DeKalvin Asgrow is here to talk to us about agriculture here. Trump tariffs, I wanted to bring that up. And do you find it's very polarizing when you when we say those words, Trump tariffs? We're going to zoom out beyond the farm gate. So when farmers hear tariffs, what should they really be thinking about, Lance?
I mean, I think you're never going to reach complete consensus on that, because it is so polarizing, because it's tied to politics.
Right.
And, you know, farmers tend to lean conservative, but there are some liberal farmers out there.
Sure.
And it does depend a little bit on how you vote, how you feel about tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
It depends a little bit on how you feel about President Trump, how you feel about tariffs. It depends a little bit on, are you looking at the short game or the long game? And, you know, when it's your business and your livelihood, you get kind of interested in the short game. And if tariffs are a good long game strategy, but it hurts you in the short run, you know, then it can be difficult. I don't personally think they had the impact on the markets that I expected them to. I was, and again, I was very bearish. I really thought that this China thing and all the trade and all the chatter and all the rhetoric and all the tariffs, you know, I sold 1050 beans, was pretty sure they'd be $8 by fall and I'd look like a genius.
Yeah.
And, you know, my 1050 beans, I could have done better than that, you know, at harvest.
Yeah. Wow.
I hadn't had them sold ahead. So.
So then, Jim, do tariffs create more uncertainty or opportunity?
Both. I mean, if you think about it, the fear of the tariff, all right, put a bearish tilt on the market through late 24 into early 25.
Yeah.
Well, what did we do as the American farmer with, I think, 970 new crop beans in April and 470 corn futures? We planted the biggest corn base in the history of America.
Yeah.
Okay. Lance didn't like his 10-foot. If we'd have planted the acres we should have, we probably would have never went to those 1150 bean futures.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We swung acres away from corn to beans. Now, did we sell enough corn to offset that switch? When we were switching, were you selling 470 corn as aggressively as you were planting it? No. I screamed at some guys because they were not switching at 80. I was hearing 400 and 500 acres this spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, boys, you've got to get under this if you're doing that, because the whole pendulum swings if we plant those acres and have a good growing season. And
yeah,
Illinois is the ugly duckling. We're the one state that's 3 bushel off of last year. Kansas, Minnesota, the Dakotas, they're where the better yields and acres came from.
Yeah.
And you got caught. So it creates opportunity, but it also creates uncertainty, which, understand the risk you're taking.
Well, let's talk risk planning. And do you think it becomes more important in political cycles, Jim?
It can. Lance, I mean, there's a lot of games get played. Let's face it. Okay. I mean, we had Steve Johnson in town yesterday. And, okay, when are the midterms? October?
Yeah, is that right? October, November?
I think so. November 26th,
okay.
Right? Yeah.
Probably going to be some funds in the farmer account in October with different programs.
Okay.
Is there a purpose to that? Of course there is.
You're thinking there's going to be some windfall.
Big beautiful bill is starting to come into play.
Yeah.
And it's a big deal. There's a lot of subsidy in our crop insurance tools.
Yep.
You're going to probably have lower cost insurance because of the government subsidy coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also doing a little deal where you had to choose ARC or PLC last March. Well, now they're just going to pay you whichever one's better, no matter what you chose.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. So does that have something to do with ARC? Yeah, it probably does.
Okay, yeah.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
You know.
You're going to see it.
Everything's about politics, and politics is about money. That's the way the world works.
Jim Anderson from North & Company Risk Management. Mitch Klotfelter is a new team member with North & Company. And Lance Tarchione, a technical agronomist with DeKalb and Asgro, host of our Saturday morning Ag Talk program. We're talking ag. So, Lance, I'll direct this to you. How do tariffs eventually show up in seed decisions or crop planning?
I mean, Jim kind of hit on it in his comments. We planted a huge corn crop because the main hit of all the tariff chatter was soybeans, not corn.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so, relatively speaking, the market was telling you grow corn. Mm-hmm. And we had a really good spring when we had great field conditions. We had plenty of days to plant. It was a perfect year to change your plans in the spring, and that worked out well. And so that was a case where, you know, if the tariffs if they suppress the prices equally of both crops, I'd say they'd have no effect on it. But in this case, they suppressed one crop more than the other one, which made the other one look more attractive. It also happens to be the favorite crop of some farmers.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't take much to incentivize guys to want to raise more corn.
Okay. So the farmers, they adjust or they just ride it out?
We'll talk in a month or 6 weeks when we get these insurance prices set.
Okay.
Because after the crop report, if you notice, corn took the bigger hit.
Oh.
Beans have actually had a better recovery. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what's the farmer's attitude if, per se, we have a 445 corn price not 470,
mm-hmm.
and maybe 1075 or 80 in the beans, not 1054.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect the farmer's decision for the 26 crop? With higher nitrogen and inputs in corn, the balance sheet might flip the other way. Well, what if we add 4 or 5 million acres of beans and pull it mm-hmm. off corn March 31st? Now what?
Okay.
A reversal to last mm-hmm. year. You know, beans might fall off like corn did, and corn might get that spring summer rally that everyone's wanting to see yeah. to unload inventory.
Well, and agronomically, to raise a big corn crop again, that means you're going to have a lot of corn on corn, which some people don't really like to do. And so, you know, if you just rotate everything, you're going to have a huge bean crop and a small corn crop. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
There will always be some corn back on corn, but there's going to have to be a lot to keep the corn acres where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if the market is, you know, leaning guys the other way, and yeah, you pull a few million acres off of one crop and throw them on the other one, then that kind of, you know, flips Jim's balance sheet of which one we've got more of than the other.
Right. Lance Starchione, Jim Anderson, Mitch Klotfelder is a new team member with North & Company. There with Jim Anderson. Let's talk about those foreign markets. How dependent is U.S. ag on foreign buyers, Jim?
Definitely. I mean, we need to export. It's all
connected.
Mm-hmm. We need to export grain because domestically we grow way more than we use. So we need that export market. And fortunately, corn's been solid. I mean, we've got a good corn demand. We just grew 17 billion bushels of it.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, if you look at the numbers, our carryout is 100 million bushels more than last year, but the percent to usage is less. We're using more. That's a good thing, longer term. So I always don't get too bearish too long.
Yeah.
But on the other side of it, you know, if everybody rings the bell, we've now proven that a national yield north of 190 is probably not out of the question.
Mm.
Because Iowa and Illinois did not ring the bell this year, and we're at 186.5.
Right. Yeah. Right. Who are we competing with when we talk about foreign markets? Mitch, you want to jump in here at all? Or
I mean, Brazil and Argentina are going to be the main digs in that fight. I mean, in fact, the matter is they're pretty dang good at growing these crops. I mean, corn, we're tropical sugar plant. It works well in South America, and they keep finding acres down there. You know, every year that I've been in the industry, we keep talking about monster crops down there, and that's just because of the fact that the rainforest exists, and it's getting a little bit smaller all the time. And then so it's another conversation, but you start talking about the non-deforested deal and what they're doing down there and those policies and if they come off and that creates even more uncertainty to what we're able to do and compete on the world stage and then you know you cycle back to tariffs on where FOB corn makes the most sense for Europe and East Asia and fact of the matter is sometimes we're just not there. And it's very, there's just so many different factors that play into that, you know, ocean freight, rain, weather, politics. There's just, we try to pinpoint one thing and blame one thing. And there's just so many, things, you know, you've got people that are sitting in Switzerland, trading those accounts, you know, and how they feel on any given day could change, what's being bought, and how they feel about their position and how they feel about, where they see world economics going, and talking amongst their office. So, it gets crazy in a hurry.
Yeah. Mitch Klotfelder is a new team member at North & Company Risk Management there in Galva. Jim Anderson is here from North & Company. Lance Starchione, technical agronomist with DeKalb and Asgrow, and also host of our Saturday morning Ag Talk program here on WGIL. China still a major influence.
Oh, yeah. I mean, where the people are, you know, China, India, you know, countries that with billions and billions of people to feed. And I think one thing that a lot of, you know, non-farm people probably don't understand is we use billions and billions of bushels of corn, but we don't eat very much of it. We feed it to something that then gets eaten.
Gotcha.
And so the, you know, as the world economy goes, I mean, the more money people have, the more meat they like to eat typically.
Yeah.
And the more meat that gets consumed around the world, that's going to use up a lot of corn to feed those animals. Mm. And, you know, people that don't like meat and don't like livestock production, you know, like to point out that it would be way more efficient if we just ate the plant instead of feeding it to an animal. But that doesn't change the fact that most people like meat.
Yeah.
Myself included.
Yeah.
Probably right. These guys too.
Yes, sir.
And so, you know, as economies improve around the world, and people in India and people in China can afford to, you know, eat better,
yeah,
they're going to eat more meat, and it's going to take corn to feed the animals to raise that meat.
So how does global demand influence breeding priorities, technology investments and advancements, all that?
I mean,
From your side of it.
Yeah. I think from our side, you know, we operate under the assumption that farmers are going to continue to want to buy the highest yielding stuff they can buy,
sure,
no matter what else is going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to produce. And when you're producing a commodity, which even when it's $6 or $7 a bushel, it's still a commodity, typically your profitability is driven more by your yield than it is, yeah, by your price.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a yield game. And so what we need is products that are protected from things that take yield away.
Are going to hurt that yield. Right, right, right.
So whether it's a disease or an insect or weeds, drought or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is something that sometimes surprises people. We've really done very little with all the technology and all the breeding to increase the genetic yield potential of corn.
Oh, okay.
What we have done is we've enabled it to yield closer to its potential.
Oh, I see.
So we have limited what it loses.
Yeah.
You know, if you measure what an individual plant can produce,
mm-hmm,
a open pollinated corn variety that, you know, our great grandfathers might have planted in 1930,
yeah,
that individual plant will produce as much yield as today's plant.
So it should have been producing, if all of the obstacles were out of its way, it would have produced the same that we're getting now.
Pretty close. Yes.
We've just
not me personally.
Well,
but,
not
yeah,
you, but have taken all the obstacles out of the way of that plant.
Well, you've enabled it. The average corn planted population used to be about 10,000 plants per acre.
Yeah.
You know, and if you'd have planted those products at the 35,000 plants per acre we plant today, your yield would have, wow, been zero, because they couldn't have handled it.
They couldn't have handled it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you planted today's hybrids at 10,000 plants per acre,
yeah,
your yield would be half or less what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can plant 35,000 plants per acre, when you've got the management that we've got today, I mean, farmers can plant the crop so much faster. We can manage the crop so much better. Yeah. We understand fungicides. We understand nitrogen. You know, there's just, you know, it's just crazy to think that, you know, a couple generations ago, you know, our average corn planting date has probably moved up a month. Our average soybean,
yeah,
planting date's moved up probably close to 2 months.
Yeah.
So we just, it's just totally different than it was decades ago. And you've got not just genetics, but the management, the equipment, the ability to plant, you know, 1,000 acres a day instead of 10.
Wow.
You know?
Yes.
So it's just crazy what we can get done. And the more timely you do things,
mm-hmm,
and the better you do things, the more yield potential you're gonna have.
And, Jim, the more money you're going to make.
Well, that's the goal.
That's the
hopefully
idea.
That's hopefully the goal. But as everything goes, with bigger yields and all, costs go up, the,
yeah,
profit,
right,
margin tends to be kind of narrow in agriculture, and we have,
right,
to be aware of that.
Well, you mentioned that even in 2025, you've seen input costs are higher than they ever have. Do you see 2026 being even higher?
Yes.
I would say so, yeah. I mean, that's what the economic picture is showing. I mean, there's certain things that have, you know, stayed flat or come down a little, but there's more that went up than came down.
Yeah. Well, when we talk about planning for 2026, what's one thing that the producer shouldn't be putting off this winter if you're having conversations this winter when you're thinking about your operation?
Well, what's committed and what's not, okay? We talk with Steve Johnson. You know, he's a big forward seller. The day you put on anhydrous, you're married to growing corn. There's no switching that acre. Well, did you sell corn that day? Because we were probably up at 470 D's corn for next year ammonia season.
Yeah.
When you paid for the ammonia in August, did you sell any corn? Because we were up there at 470.
Oh, boy.
Well, once you're committed, it makes your decisions easier because there's nothing to talk about. Once my ammonia went on, my 80's going to corn.
Yeah.
I've done enough marketing. I hope it doesn't fall apart. I had orders for that bullish crop report to sell more, and I didn't get it accomplished, so they came down.
Yeah.
But the point is, you know what you're doing. Are you thinking about the historical ups and downs? Because I have to be very aware that the last two summers, the low side of corn in August had a 3 in front of it.
Yeah.
Okay. High 4s is nothing to sneeze at.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got bins, we'll talk about capturing carry, taking these futures out to March, May, store through the glut, and we'll go down the road and we'll get those bags picked up for Lance. And but the thing is thinking about that.
Yeah.
You know, you farm every year, and my instinct commercial, if it's warm and dry on April 15th, planters roll.
Okay.
If corn hits 480 at any time, how much are you selling?
Yeah.
Well, is it the same?
Mm-mm.
Guys have a different mentality. Yeah. It's not instinct. It's, oh, boy, you know, how far can this thing go?
Mm-hmm. And it's that fear, hope, and greed.
Right, right. And it's instead of securing X amount of revenue, and we'll talk crop insurance in another 6 weeks when we get – but there's some math involved in this, and it's amazing how the market can find its way to your most stressful point. And if you didn't prepare for it, now it's hard to – I don't know what to do once you're down here. Because a year ago, I mean, March corn was trading 490 last February.
Yeah.
It's 420. We're hoping we keep the 4 in front of it. I got to say, 2 years ago, 4 didn't hold with a similar carryout in the January crop report. It went just a little under, and then we finally got a toehold and got a little spring rally. So,
Jim Anderson and Mitch Klotfelter from North & Company Risk Management in Galva talking about farm marketing for ag marketing for 2026. Lance Tarchione is a technical agronomist with DeKalb and Asgrow, also host of our Saturday Morning Ag Talk program. Lance talks a lot about life on the family farm, and there's family farms kind of going away. I mean, it's being more corporate.
I think that's a bit of a misnomer. I mean,
that's what we hear.
There are a lot of family farming operations who have incorporated for tax purposes, business purposes. You know, Jim mentioned it earlier that, I mean, farming is a low margin business.
Yeah.
And most of your, you know, ADMs and Bears and John Deere's and, you know, the ag corporations or other corporations that could, I mean, anybody who wants to could buy land and start farming if you've got lots of money.
Yeah.
But if you've got lots of money, there's probably better things to do with it than get into production agriculture.
Yeah.
So, you know, are there some corporate farms? Yes. Are there some very large family farms that, you know, so I would say rather than farms going corporate, they're getting bigger.
Yeah.
Now, most of these big farms are big family farms. Mm-hmm. And there's, I think it's the medium-sized guy that we're losing because there's always going to be small guys like Jim and I that have a regular job and then farm on the side. Mm-hmm. It in theory, if you've got a 200-acre farm and a good job in town, it really doesn't matter if your farm makes money or not. As long as you don't lose a lot, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, sure.
But that guy that's trying to farm 1,000 or 1,500 acres and raise a family off of that, that's tough.
Yeah.
You know, and almost all those guys, somebody in that household has a job off farm.
Mm-hmm.
you know, either either the farmer or the farmer's wife or somebody, you know, is working a job somewhere else that's kind of helping feed into that, get benefits, insurance, that kind of stuff. That's a killer for any independent business person is how you gonna, you know, how you gonna get health insurance.
Lancey, do you find that, I'll bring this to you, Jim and Mitch as well, that mid-sized farmer, the price of land, what it's selling for, is that even more of an incentive to go, you know what, maybe it's time to
I mean, there's a lot of land selling all the time, you know, and it seems like there was, to me, maybe more that sold this, you know, here in the last couple months than normal in this area. But, you know, it's most people who own land are in it for the long haul. You know, you're not flipping farms like you flip houses. And so, you know.
The argument, I think, with the land now is like, okay, well, it doesn't cash flow. And, you know, better question for these guys is when has it, you know? If we look back on farmland as an investment going back, you know, it it's our numbers are changing. Our numbers are going up, but the general idea hasn't changed a whole lot on what you're on the reason that you're investing in that land. And I think that's probably why we still see land doing what it's doing and then not backing off, especially, you know, given the prices that we have, given the input costs and the challenges that are there, is that the general idea of farmland as an investment and those that are buying into that, I don't think they have changed sentiment in quite a long time.
Well, Mitch, let me ask you then, is it a better idea to, with the prices the way they are, is it better to buy land or is it better to rent the ground to these days?
Wow. Tough question. Okay. That's a really good question.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I pay attention sometimes.
Well.
And I'm curious.
If you don't lose the farm once you own it, it's yours and no one can take it from you.
Yeah.
I mean, I said to a friend of mine, and I believe he worked at the meat lab with Lance and I way back when, I said, you know, it was the late 90s, and I think, you know, cash rents were, oh my gosh, almost $180. We can't even fathom that now.
Oh, no, right.
But it was ridiculous with LDPs and $2 corn.
Right.
I said, you know, I'd rather own 80 acres than rent 500 because I know it's mine. If I own it, nobody takes it from me.
Okay.
Every year, I, you know, the guys, they have to get the lease signed. Am I going to farm? So there's uncertainty there with these short-term leases.
Yeah.
So if you can swing it, I'd say ownership probably is better, but that's a huge investment. It's a lot of money at $15,000 and $20,000 an acre.
Yeah, no
you know,
kidding.
And even strip mine grounds bringing $7,500 here recently. So I mean, it takes a lot of money. You don't just think about farming. If you're a 6-year-old boy and say I want to be a farmer, Dad and Grandpa better have your back because that's probably not going to happen otherwise. It's really hard to get it started from scratch.
Yeah, you would have to be independently wealthy to start from scratch. And if you're independently wealthy, I don't know why you'd want to do it. Because you could do something with your money that would probably return more than becoming a farmer.
Well, then let's look at it this way. If you own ground, you're not a farmer, but you own ground, family ground that's been passed along to you, is it a good time to sell or is it a good time to, should you hang on to it?
I wouldn't sell now, no. Yeah. I mean, think about when you want to sell when things are really, really good.
Yeah.
And they will get good again someday. If you got some patience, I've been through, again, 2 or 3 big cycles.
Yeah,
I think off the air, I said, we're one drought away from a bull market. Well,
someday
it's coming. You know, it took, from 2012, it took a decade to get to 22. Hmm. Well, but it happened. And there will be that, time come. Yeah, it's just, what's your long term? Do you have another generation? You know, what's the longevity plan of the family farm? Is there somebody that's going to want to take it on from you, or if not, you know, when things are up and you want to walk away. But then, as my dad said, the first time I think land brought $15,000 in 2012, he asked me what I'd do if I sold that 80 I lived on. I said, it's yours. Do what you want. He did some quick math, and all he could say was, you know what I'd have to pay in capital gains.
Right.
And he walked out the door, and we never spoke of it again.
Never spoke of it again. There you go. Jim Anderson from North & Company. Mitch Klotfelder is a new team member there at North & Company Risk Management in Galvin. Lance Tarchione is a technical agronomist with DeKalb and Asgrow, and also host of our Saturday morning program, Ag Talk. So as we wrap things up, we've been talking for quite a while here, guys, but real quick, what still gives you confidence in agriculture? I'll start with Mitch again, the young person here on the dais here. What gives you confidence as a young person in agriculture?
Yeah, I think and this is going to get awful darn soapboxy on us here.
It's okay.
But the resolve of the American farmer, of the American human, you know, adaptation, different ideas. Yeah. Young people still bringing different ideas on how we can do stuff more profitably, how we can drive, not only more revenue, but also figure out what the best use is of that land. I do believe that God created humans to live close to the land, and those that are able to do that are some of the most fortunate on this planet. And I think everyone realizes that. And so I don't see a world in where people don't want to live where they live and do what they do. There may be some changes in how we do things, but I don't see those as a complete negative. And I wouldn't be able to tell you what they are right now either.
Yeah.
But I think as a young person in agriculture, that's the horizon that we're looking to right now.
Boy, that makes you feel good about the listening to somebody like that. Mm-hmm. Feel like it's in good hands, the future of ag here.
Mm-hmm.
You hope that there's millions more like Mitch here that's going to take this and move it into the future, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. What do you see? What gives you confidence in agriculture? What? Still?
Well, in short, everyone has to eat. Yeah. Food, clothing, and shelter are necessities.
That's what the fat guy was thinking, I tell you.
So we as farmers feed the world, and nobody can survive without food.
Yeah.
So that's a continual process. So yeah. There's always going to be someone growing food in this world. So, with that, it's just a case of understand the cycles. We're really good at what we do. And sometimes this is the tough thing. When you've done your job well, the market is not rewarding you.
Yeah.
Big crops, low price. Yeah. So you have to separate that in your business, where most businesses, if you do really well, you make a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, if you produce an extra 5,000 of this at the factory at $5 a pop, that's money in your pocket. Well, more bushels doesn't always yield higher price, and that's the slide rule that we have to work with guys each year to try to look at what the highs and lows have been with the yields and go, okay, balance your revenue goals. We all want to be up here.
Yeah.
I mean, I was telling Mitch, I think in 2022, it was ridiculous. 650 corn off the combine, grew 250 bushels of it. Massive revenue per acre that year. Well, go back to your moving averages. We're going to end up back, and here we are.
Yeah.
Prepare for that. When you're in those times, I will scream at every young guy, when we're a dollar a bushel above the 10-year average, out 2 and 3 years, get your long-term plan going.
Yes. Yeah. Jim Anderson from North & Company Risk Management. Lance, same thing. What still gives you confidence in that?
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a blend of the two previous answers. I mean, I think the lifestyle, the passion for the land, the what we all love doing, I don't think that's ever going to change. Farmers have always been that way, and if there's a million of us or 10 of us, they'll be that way. And, as the kind of a double-edged sword, I mean, people want to eat, there's differing opinions on where the global population is going. I mean, a few years ago, we thought that within 20 or 30 years, we might have a hard time feeding everybody. And I think they've kind of moderated on that, but, people talk about global climate change, and as the environment changes, if that impacts our ability to raise a crop, I think here in Illinois, we're sitting on some of the best soil with some of the best weather with the best source of water. There's, you know, you go out west where they raise a lot of corn, it's totally dependent on irrigation.
Yeah.
Coming out of aquifers that are being depleted. I mean, their future, you know, to me, might be a little shakier than ours, but I mean, right here in the central Corn Belt, where, you know, Mother Nature blessed us with soil and moisture, you know, this is a good place to be. And, you know, they're not making, you know, I guess Brazil's making more farmland these days, but globally, you know, we lose farmland every year to development or a solar farm or a wind farm or a new subdivision or whatever. So we're going to have to continue to increase yields, going to have to continue to do better just to, you know, maintain.
Yeah.
And that's probably going to provide opportunities for agriculture to be successful into the future.
Lance Tarchione, Jim Anderson, and Mitch Clodfelter. Thanks. Good crops start with good decisions and good conversations like this, I think. So nice job. We had so many. Boy, I'd love to get into solar. I'd love to get into all that other stuff, but maybe next time. So, again, thanks to Lance Tarchione with DeKalb Asgrow. And be sure to tune in to Ag Talk on Saturday mornings here on WGIL 715. And Jim Anderson, you can hear him on Wednesday mornings with Tyler and Jay here talking ag markets. Mitch Clodfelter, congratulations there and joining North & Company, and look forward to having you all again come and talk to us about ag. We appreciate you so much, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Trading futures and or options involves risk of loss and may not be suitable for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results.